All right, so Genesis 33, and I'll start out just by reading this chapter. We'll be looking at the whole chapter today. Last week we were looked at Jacob and how he wrestled with God, right? Jacob wrestles with God, and we saw how God changed his name from Jacob to Israel. It's interesting to note, just as we go through this, that he is referred to Jacob almost twice as many times or more times than he's referred to Israel. Okay, so even after God changes his name, his name continues to be called, he continues to be called Jacob. And I think we can maybe just ask ourselves why that is. Why is it that he is continued to be called Jacob? I mean, we saw that Abraham, his name was changed by God as well, right? He originally started out as Abram, and then his name was changed to Abraham. And after his name was changed to Abraham, he's pretty much referred to as Abraham. But here with Jacob, it's a little bit different. So that was just sort of a wrap up from our last session. And as we look at this, let's begin in Genesis 33, beginning in verse 1. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground seven times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob, and he embraced him, threw his arms around his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. And last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What do you mean by all these droves I met?" "To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." No, please," said Jacob. "If I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Now that you have received me favorably, please accept the present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. But Esau said, "Let us be on our way. I'll accompany you." But Jacob said to him, "My lord knows that the children are tender, and I must care for the ewes and the cows that are nursing their young. If they are driven hard just one day, all the animals will die. So let my lord go on ahead of his servant, while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children, and until I come to my lord in Seir." Esau said, "Then let me leave some of my men with you." "But why do that?" Jacob asked. "Just let me find favor in the eyes of my lord." And so that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelters for his livestock. That is why the place is called Succoth. After Jacob came from Padam Aram, he arrived safely in the city of Shechem in Canaan, and camped within sight of the city. For 100 pieces of silver he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. And then he set up an altar and called it El Elohe Israel, which just by the footnote there, El Elohe Israel can mean God the God of Israel, or Mighty is the God of Israel. So, that's what the name means. And in our previous discussion, our previous previously we looked at how Jacob was on his way back home, right? He had been away for how long? 20 years, right? He'd been away from home for 20 years and was on his way back. And when he had left, he left under poor circumstances. His relationship with his brother Esau was not too good, to put it mildly, right? Esau was intent on killing him, right? Because he felt that Jacob had wronged him. And in fact, Jacob had wronged him. Jacob had tricked him out of the blessing from Isaac. We have seen, haven't we, how the hand of God, in the hand of God's providence in Jacob's life. He left with nothing but the clothes on his back, and he returned here with droves of cattle, with wives, with children. He returned with many possessions. And we have seen, haven't we, how even in spite of Jacob's trickery, even in spite of his fooling his brother, even in spite of the various issues between him and Laban, that God has been with Jacob, right? He's watched over him, and he is returning him home. And so that's really where we pick up today's lesson. So we have Jacob had while he stayed behind, and while he had wrestled with God, he had sent ahead droves of groups of sheep and goats and camels and livestock for his brother. And he had heard that his brother was coming with how many men? 400 men. So he still wasn't quite so sure what was really happening. But he does know what was God's promise to him. He does know that God promised that he would return home. So, you know, he knows that God, in his providence, in his sovereignty, has said, you know, you're going to return home. And so he was on his way home. All right, so do you think that Jacob knows this, right? Jacob knows that God is, has told him that he's going to return home. He knows God's promise. But do you think that Jacob is taking precautions anyway? What are the precautions that Jacob is taking? Okay.
You
put the people he loved the least in the front.
And he sent gifts ahead.
Okay, he had sent gifts ahead. What do you think his precaution was in doing this? Why did he split up? Yeah, to give if they are attacked by Esau, to give them time to get away.
But the ones up front are the ones who care for the beast.
Yeah, the ones up front are, we could certainly presume that, right? Leah and, the maidservants, and then Leah, and then Rachel, and yeah, right, right. So, and then later on, too, when Esau says, well, what are all these droves I met? How about if I leave some of my men with you? What's Jacob's response there? No, that's all right, right? Well, I'll take a pass on that, right? So was Jacob back to his old games of trickery here, or was Jacob, putting faith in God's promise? Because, you could kind of interpret this either way, right? What do you think? I mean, Jacob, his name had been changed to Israel, but if you note here, he's called Jacob in this in this passage at least. What do you think? What's your opinion? Because I'll be honest with you, I read some about this in preparation, and I also listened to a sermon, and they kind of maybe had a little bit different emphasis or a little bit different take on that particular question. So I'm interested as to what you think.
I think he did demonstrate his whole personality in trying to be strategic in preventive. Like he was trying to create the situation, right? Create his ideal situation, and always thinking, because in the back of his mind, he's thinking, they may not obey what God has commanded. So I think he was still trying to be strategic.
Okay. All right, so he's still some strategy going on there. Okay. All right. Do you think he ever intended to go back to Seir, where Esau was from?
That was a good question. That was a question I had as we read. I couldn't remember if I ever found out that he did or did not go to Seir.
Well, he didn't at the end of this passage, at least, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wondered about that too. Was he trying to be slick and saying, you think I'm going there? I ain't going there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly a question that you could raise, right? And what about his excuse as far as, the flocks can't be driven even one day? The children are tired. We can't be hard on them. Do you think that's a legit excuse?
It's legitimate for the moment, making a decision to go right then and there.
Okay. Legitimate for the moment.
Well, his brother seems to have bought it, so it might be a particularly common thing.
Okay.
Depending on the season, he knows when the animals give birth and all that stuff. So.
Okay. Okay. Could have been that time of year. All right. You think it was a nice, convenient excuse for him?
It might have been true to a degree, but I think it was,
convenient excuse, I like
that. Yeah. Notice, the thing I will say is I tend to maybe think somewhat, you're right, but he does build shelters, at this point. He doesn't drive the flocks, on, and, he does journey on sort of at a later point, right? So there is, I think, perhaps some truth to it. We're not really told here. I mean, I think it's somewhat reading into the passage, because we don't really know. And that's typically the way the Bible is written, isn't it? We're not always given, the thinking of the characters in the Bible. We're just basically given a narrative, right? And were to sort of understand or seek to try and understand that narrative. I think that you probably could be taken either way. As far as going to Seir, it could be that he really did plan on going to Seir. Or maybe not.
I just thought of something.
Yeah.
If you went through that and he went through it, being fearful and anxious, he's meeting his brother who he, swore that was going to kill him, and then this happened. I think it's like saying, just let me rest. Let's rest on this.
Okay.
Maybe
he's...
The relief.
Yeah.
Let me just gather in everything that just happened. My prayer was...
Okay. Okay. Yeah, maybe he's just resting. That's entirely true. I mean, I think actually, it probably would have been disobedient for Jacob to go to Seir, right? Because what had God promised him? That you'll return home, right? His home was not in Seir.
That was the
God promised him what? That he would return home. Now, it's possible, you know, and I think I'm just throwing out these things as possibilities, you know, because I don't really believe that we're told here. It's possible that, you know, he thought, well, maybe I'll go with my, you know, go to my brother and see her. And then he thought the better of it later on, right? And said, oh, you know, that would really. But I think really the point that I would maybe just make by this is that, you know, Jacob almost has what we might say is a real turning point, right? When he wrestles with God. He wrestles with God. He has real faith, doesn't he? That even, what did we say? You know, even if I'm going to suffer more, I want your blessing, right? Even if your blessing means more suffering for me. I mean, that's really what his attitude in the last one. It was a great moment of faith for Jacob. But we see also, and we see this in Abraham, we see this in the other patriarchs as well, right? We see how they have these great moments of faith, but they also have these moments where, you know, they show all kinds of unbelief, right? You know, how could you do that, right? You know, Abraham with Hagar, you know, Abraham with you know, I mean, how, you know, with Abimelech, you know, how could you show such unbelief, right? Where, you know, God promises you something, and the next thing you know, Abraham is because he's scared, you know. But isn't that the way our life is? Isn't that the way our faith is, right? We have these moments when we're, you know, on a mountaintop with God, you know, when we're, you know, we have great moments of faith, right? And then the next thing we know, what happens? You know, we fall into some, you know, we do something wrong, you know, like we fall, right? And I think, you know, when we understand the patriarchs, you know, when we understand, you know, Jacob, you know, I think, you know, Jacob in particular, you know, we see how often, even though God had called him, even though he has these great moments of faith, how often he kind of just loses it, right? We have, you know, I think some ways in which really we see God's sovereignty, God's providence, really shining through in this situation. You know, that Jacob finds himself in, where his brother, last time they met 20 years ago, wanted to kill him. And remember when Rachel sent him away, she said, you know, maybe time will sort of soften, you know, Esau's attitude. And we find that it has. But how do we see God's sovereignty? How do we see God's providence, you know, in this situation? How, you know, in spite of the attitude that Esau had to Jacob last time around 20 years ago, that, you know, we see God really just at work here. Okay.
And, and I think, like what you said before in the last statement, that, you know, how we see God's people reacting and, you know, and how they sin in the midst of great things happening to them,
right?
And then God showing us here in His Word how encouraging that is. Like, you know, like when we do fall, you know, He picks us back up,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and we are sinners, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, we do make a lot of
mm-hmm.
sin, and. I hate to call it mistakes. But we sin.
Okay, so we see God's providence, don't we, in Esau's attitude, right? We see his attitude towards Jacob has changed. Who could change, you know, this man who, I mean, nothing changed about the situation. Jacob had still stolen what he had stolen and, you know, wasn't giving it back, right? And the blessing was still Jacob's, right? Nothing had changed. And Jacob hadn't even, you know, said he was sorry, right? For what we, you know, or asked Esau to forgive him, right? The situation is still what it is, right? Nothing's changed about the situation other than time. So what is it that happened here?
So I'm impressed with this verse that says, "For to see your face is like seeing the face of God." So Jacob saw God's answer, and he really saw that God had answered his prayer. Because when he wrestled with the angel, and he knew then that he could go home, everything was back to normal, or not back to normal, but he was able to go back. So when he saw his brother Esau face to face, he could tell, this is real, the guy, although he, well, no, maybe not. I don't get that. Now, never mind, I talked myself out.
Okay.
I just realized that he then still had these little schemes of his to try to protect his family and himself still. So I don't know.
I think in that is because he was so relieved.
Is what?
He was so relieved.
Relieved?
And that he could, you know, that he said, like seeing the face of God. It's like
an answered prayer is what I kind of thought for a minute there, but then
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a sense, isn't there, in which Jacob's attitude, I mean, he is happy, it seems, at least, from what we could read here. He is happy to see Esau, right? I think, you know, perhaps, like you say, Ro, it's, you know, a happiness that comes from relief, right? Well, that's over with, you know. Esau didn't, you know, send his 400 men to kill me, you know.
I mean, he has to know that he wronged his brother, like, no matter how, you know, it turned out, and, you know, that it was what the Lord, that this blessing was what the Lord wanted for him anyway. You know, he has to know that he did wrong, and he was, you know, kind of a scoundrel there. Like, you have to figure he felt some remorse over it. And we don't actually see that spoken out loud, but, you know, these two were twins. I mean, they had to, no matter what happened when they grew up to be adults, they had to have at some point in their life been close. Like, you know, you have to think, like, just on a relational standpoint, like, you know, this is your twin brother that you haven't seen in 20 years, and the last time you saw him, he wanted to kill you. And now he's, like, you know, so happy to see you that he's, like, hugging you, you know, at first sight. Like, so there has to be some, like, emotional connection between the two of them. And then there's Jacob getting, like, cautious again. Like, but what if he changes his mind?
He remembers that he's going to kill him. Maybe not so much afraid of what his brother would do. Maybe he was not confident in his brother's guise.
Yeah.
What kind of mischief or what they would do, thinking that they would be honoring Esau. So maybe he was protecting himself or concerned about Esau's soldiers.
Yeah.
So there's a thought, because, you know, many times the soldiers did betray, thinking that they're honoring, like in King David's time, Saul, you know, they thought they were doing King David an honor by, you know, killing or putting him through, finishing him off, or whatever you want to call it. But and how about his son Absalom? The same thing. So maybe that's it. That's the culture, and that was the thing that happened back then.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob's life too. I mean, it goes back and forth. Jacob and Laban. I mean, that was a crazy situation. Father-in-law, look what he did to his son-in-law. You know, full of deceit there. And then I think, then Jacob in return, somehow with those spotted lambs, how he figured that out. And that was a way he screw Laban. I screwed Laban back.
Right.
So it was like, whoo, it was like back and forth.
Right.
So.
Right. What do you think Jacob thought happened? I think we're given a clue as to that, right? if you read all the way through the whole chapter to the end, what's the end there? What does he name the place?
God of Israel.
The Lord is mighty, right? I mean, I think if you at least one of the interpretations there in the footnote, the Lord is mighty. If you can squint your eyes enough to see the footnote. The Lord is mighty. I think, you know, Jacob fully knows that Esau had the power to kill him, had the ability to kill him, and it was only the attitude, the change of attitude in God, or in Esau, was only brought about by God, right? It says, you know, in Scripture that, you know, the Lord directs, like that many are our thoughts of a man's heart, but the Lord directs them in the way that he would please. And we see this, don't we? You know, we see this over and over again in Scripture. You know, Nebuchadnezzar, right? You know, the Lord is in control of the situation. God is sovereignly in control of the situation. This situation is impossible for Jacob. There's really nothing he can do. His brother's coming. His brother has 400 men. But the Lord changes Esau at least enough so that, you know, Jacob is not endangered, you know, by his brother. You know, the Lord changes the attitude, right? And, you know, so it's really, isn't it? Don't we see the Lord's providence, the Lord's sovereignty in this situation? Look, you know, Jacob, you know, you may be, you know, you may be afraid, but look, I'm in control of this, right? And Jacob, I think, really realizes that, you know, in his naming of this place, the Lord is mighty. You know, he moves on. You know, I think, you know, another, you know, couple other interesting things to note here where, you know, when Jacob eventually settles down, where does he live? Okay, what does he live in? In tents, right? In tents. No. He built a place, but then he moved on to, and yeah, okay. So he lives in tents. He bought a piece of land, but he's living in tents. He's not building a city. He's living in tents. There is a sense in which Jacob knew that the Lord, you know, had given him this land, right? But this land, what was the land that he was looking forward to? You know, it says this in Hebrews about Abraham. He was looking forward to the city whose architect and builder was God, right? He was but tabernacling here while he was, you know, in this land. But he was looking forward to that city whose, you know, who was God. And we see this over and over again. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they don't live. I mean, they're wealthy, right? They're blessed by the worldly, you know, they have, you know, a lot of possessions, you know, by worldly standards. But here they are living in tents. And, you know, part of it may be due to their occupation. I realize that. But I think, you know, Hebrews, the book of Hebrews is pretty clear, at least with Abraham, that he was looking, and I think we see the same thing in Jacob. So we see, don't we, the Lord's providence for the Lord's, you know, providence, Lord's sovereignty, you know, in this situation, you know, where, you know, Jacob, you know, for all intents and purposes, could have been killed by Esau. But God always keeps his promises, returns him, you know, to the land of Canaan. and Jacob settles down. Okay, so any questions before we close today? Before we close out. Right.
We are going to go to the city built. Well, we know that when we close our eyes here on this earth, we're going to open it in the most splendid and incredible place. And it's sad to think of all the people that are not. They're missing out on the truth. They're so blinded by this darkness.
Right.
It's just hard to see.
Yeah.
Even in his situation, Jacob knew what he was going to be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right, so we have some interesting study coming up. This is probably a passage. I don't know if I've ever heard Dinah and the Shechemites. I don't know if I've ever heard a sermon on that passage. I was saying to my wife a little bit earlier that it's probably a good passage to study in the adult Sunday school class because of some of the things that would maybe have to be explained maybe we're not quite ready to explain yet. So we'll be on to that next week, and hopefully I can do some good study on it and we'll maybe get some good discussion out of that.